Welcome to Harlow on Healthcare. I'm David Harlow, and I invite you to join me by my virtual hearth as I sit down with healthcare leaders to discuss building the future of healthcare. Today, my guest is Jenna Carl, PhD, Chief Medical Officer of Big Health. Dr. Carl is responsible for developing evidence-based digital therapeutics for common mental health conditions at Big Health, and these solutions can be implemented within large employers, health plans, and health systems. Welcome, Jenna. Thank you for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me.
So to start off, I'd like to ask you to give me a thumbnail sketch of Big Health and then move into a conversation about what distinguishes digital therapeutics in this space from teletherapy. Seems to me they're closely aligned, but perhaps different.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for that question. So Big Health is a digital therapeutics company, and we've been particularly focused on sleep and then broader mental health. And what we're really trying to achieve is increased access to safe and effective non-drug therapies for mental health, given very significant access gaps across the U.S. and in the world more broadly. And so really, our products can be scaled in a way that's affordable and consistent, kind of similar to the model for drugs, but they're entirely software-based. And so the intervention is driven by those software-based algorithms. And so to your second point around what differs from teletherapy, it's really in that software basis. So, teletherapy involves providers and to deliver the actual intervention and is obviously a very important part of a healthcare model. At the same time, there's a really significant need for programs that are less intensive and just different options than that in-person type of therapy. And so, the digital therapeutics are fully automated, they're personalized, but the experience is entirely driven by the software. There's no requirement for a provider to be involved in delivering the care, though those digital therapeutics can be offered at different points of care, alongside teletherapy or in-person care. They are also standalone interventions that don't require that. So really important for kind of fitting into a step care model.
Sure. So is this the kind of thing where I would just go to the app store and download an app to be able to use this? Or would this be recommended, if not prescribed, by a clinician?
So it depends on the specific digital therapeutic, but like ours at Big Health, and I think most are not really just available for download in the App Store because they're actually intended to be offered via healthcare and covered as a healthcare benefit. So they're less focused on delivery direct to the consumer. I think when you see the more direct to consumer models, it's typically more wellness focused programs like meditation or kind of relaxation programs that are more designed for people to that can be, to stay well, to help with, more fleeting difficulties. Our digital therapeutics are targeting specific mental health conditions, sleep, anxiety, et cetera. And we're covered through large payers. So large employers or in the UK, the National Health System in certain places. And so they're typically available through those benefits platforms, which can include their employers actually direct access, or it can be through clinician referral, as you mentioned, if it's being provided through a healthcare system. So both of those models are ones that we pursue, and I think other digital therapeutics as well.
Right. Okay. So you're focused on anxiety and insomnia, and it seems to me as a layperson that those types of conditions relate to other mental health conditions as well, and obviously can trigger physical ailments if not dealt with. I'm wondering how these areas of focus sort of relate to broader human health?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, so not only are the mental health conditions we focus on, they're highly overlapping and, you know, what we call clinically is comorbid. They, you know, very often occur in the same folks, either sequentially or at the same time. And they're also, those conditions, those common mental health conditions are also really closely related to, and often, you know, there's some bi-directional feedback with other physical health conditions. So certainly, you know, folks with diabetes, for example, are, you know, twice as likely to have difficulty with some of the common mental health conditions as someone without diabetes. So there's a really important interplay there. And we think, you know, clinically and in the research that, you know, I've supported doing with our products, it's important to look at that broad array of clinical outcomes. You know, you not only want to see how much is this program helping with someone's sleep improvement, but or their anxiety, but also, you know, is it helping with any depression symptoms that are co-occurring? Is it helping with their overall, functional health, their daytime performance or daytime functioning? And, you know, and then we do specific research studies looking at our products in populations that have, you know, different types of pain conditions or other types of chronic disease. So there's a lot of that research that we've done, and I think is absolutely, you know, critical to really understanding how effective are these programs in improving someone's overall, you know, total health. And so far we see good results on that, which is not surprising given how interrelated these different conditions are.
And how are these sorts of interventions studied? And are they always studied with that same sort of rigor? It seems to me that to the extent we're talking about, maybe it's two different universes. You mentioned earlier the idea of sort of two separate groups of apps, if you will, sort of wellness focused that are sort of consumer facing and others that are more clinically focused that you would consider digital therapeutics that may be quote unquote prescription based or recommendation based and reimbursable through the healthcare system, may be subject to a different standard in terms of evidence, in terms of study. I'm wondering whether you see that as an issue generally. Is there a divide? Are there mental health apps that are not being studied with the same sort of rigor? Are there, you know, is there a standard that is in place out there or should be in place out there from your perspective in terms of looking at clinical effectiveness of digital therapeutics?
Absolutely. And I think you described it really well, actually, that I think there are these two categories where there's essentially the more consumer focused, wellness focused digital apps. And some of those do look like they are targeting mental health. And I think that's what can be tricky for patients and clinicians to understand, but there's that category. And I think the average number of studies completed for, you know, the apps in that category is zero. So there's really a deficit of clinical research on programs like that overall. And there's been a number of large studies published actually showing that. And, you know, so on the one hand, you know, some of those programs certainly may be helpful to folks, who aren't presenting with a clinical issue. On the other hand, you know, even then, there's, you know, there can be some worry of what is actually in those, you know, and is there any potential for harm? But then there's this other category, which are the kind of clinical grade digital therapeutics, and the standards for evidence there are, you know, really exactly what you see in other areas of traditional medicine, you know, the standards for, showing safety and efficacy in drugs or behavioral therapy, or other types of interventions. So, you know, you expect to see the gold standard type of study, which is a randomized controlled clinical trial. To see those clinically meaningful, statistically significant results replicated across clinical studies. So very big differences in terms of that evidence, for those two different categories. And it is, I think, largely why you see that difference in reimbursement model, as you mentioned, where the digital therapeutics are, more likely to be covered by large healthcare payers. And because, those payers are used to reviewing and vetting clinical evidence in order to, make decisions around whether to include those types of care in their system. And that's, whereas I think the other products you're less likely to see reimbursed. Although I will say it's still a time that is, it's quite noisy and it's quite confusing for a lot of, healthcare administrators, clinicians, and even patients, because there's not it's still early and there's not a really, really clear division between these two. So you're still relying on either the patient or the healthcare administrators to be able to review those evidence bodies and make decisions, correctly. And so that's, it's still an evolving space. I expect that that's going to become clearer and clearer over time, as healthcare gets used to including digital therapeutics into the care pathway.
Okay. So I want to return to the distinction that you're drawing between digital therapeutics and teletherapy, because as I understand it, your products are, in a sense, digitizing certain courses of therapy that would otherwise be cognitive behavioral therapy. Is that about right?
Yeah, it is. Exactly.
So first, I think, could you define for us briefly cognitive behavioral therapy, and then maybe we'll move into how is the app-based approach different from the in-person approach?
Sure. Yeah, so I would define cognitive behavioral therapy as a really a therapeutic umbrella that describes interventions that are focused on achieving clinical improvements through helping people make changes to different ways of thinking and patterns of thinking, as well as different patterns of behavior, as well as different physiological reactions. And so the interventions themselves are entirely based on, the therapeutic intervention with the, directly to those thoughts and those behaviors. So there's no drugs involved, or supplements. It's really entirely about making behavioral changes. But that includes a really wide set of different types of techniques that, people will be in some cases more familiar with, in other cases less familiar with. So, things like different types of mindfulness-based interventions, or which can include things to help people kind of distance or relate differently to their thoughts and emotions. Like that's a category that can be included in under CBT, as well as things that more kind of classic behavior change of helping people, change how they, relate and respond to different types of stimulus or stimuli. So it's a kind of a wide set of techniques, but they're all really essentially based on, those thoughts and behavioral patterns.
If you're just tuning in, this is Harlow on Healthcare, coming to you on Healthcare Now Radio. I'm David Harlow, and my guest today is Jenna Carl, Chief Medical Officer of Big Health. Jenna, we're talking about cognitive behavioral therapy, and I'm interested in understanding more about how this is delivered through a digital therapeutic and the research, the review that maybe has been done. I know you've recently expanded from a study approach, a study sample of users in Scotland, to being available nationwide in Scotland through the National Health Service. I'm wondering if you could say a bit about the research that was done there and the broader rollout.
Yeah, I'm happy to do that. So we have been working with the National Health System across the UK for many years really, they've been a great partner to our company in terms of beginning to explore and identify the best ways for distributing and implementing digital therapeutics into, you know, into healthcare systems. And we, in the course of the pandemic, launched our digital products, our Sleepio and Daylight, Sleepio for sleep, Daylight for anxiety, to the whole of the NHS staff. So, you know, largely healthcare providers themselves. And we, you know, we did that. I mean, there was increased need from, you know, for healthcare workers serving on the front lines of the pandemic, not only for just getting for having higher mental health need, but then also, you know, difficulties accessing traditional mental health care, which is typically, you know, in person or medication based. So we launched to all of the staff. And in the course of doing that, the staff had really great results, saw their own improvements in their own, you know, their own outcomes on sleep and anxiety. And it was some of the senior staff in the Scottish government who really wanted to help make sure to bring that to all of the Scottish people. And as a result, we actually, on October 13th, launched both Sleepio and Daylight to the entire population of Scotland through their national health system. And to our knowledge, I think that's the first countrywide implementation of digital therapeutics at that scale. And so we're really excited about it. It's 5 million people across Scotland now have access to our products. And to your question around research, this is, you know, this is relied on a long history of really rigorous clinical research along the lines of what we discussed earlier in the podcast that showed, you know, safety, efficacy, and broader effectiveness of our products in improving sleep and anxiety across large populations. And so it was through that research that, you know, the NHS was able to get confidence about providing our solutions to, you know, both their staff and then also to the broader population.
So in terms of providing solutions like this at a population level, a question often arises about equity, health equity generally, mental health equity here in particular. And I'm wondering how you see that playing out, whether in Scotland or elsewhere around the world. How do digital therapeutics enable the healthcare system to close gaps of care in a way that may not be possible otherwise? Or can they? Or is that putting too much pressure on digital therapeutics?
I think they do help close those gaps. And, you know, there are a lot of gaps and they're not a solution for everything. But, you know, what we see is that there are a lot of people who have, you know, enough stigma around approaching mental health care that they will not access in-person care, you know, whatever type. In fact, the stats in the US, I think, are something like 60% of adults with what would be diagnosable mental health conditions don't access any care at all. And so there's a large population that's not accessing care. And many of those, it's because of stigma. And also, I should say, preference. You're increasingly in, you know, a more digital age. There are just many people that think, well, why can't I just do this, you know, digitally? Like, I don't want to go to therapy once a week. It's just not my style. You know, there's people have more of the sense of like, I like to kind of do things on my own and learn on my own. And so essentially there's a lot of people that, you know, a digital option can really help make it more likely that they would actually seek help.
Right. So, I mean, that's certainly an issue, and there's a preference issue in that, and it's sort of encapsulated by a New Yorker cartoon I saw a little while back, where someone behind a desk in an office is saying to a millennial across the desk, no, you can't list your iPhone as your primary care physician. So that's sort of taking it to an extreme. But I guess the real question is, can the services we're talking about be delivered in as effective a manner through an app or through a telehealth approach. And in addition to the efficacy question, I guess there's the equity and access question. Not everybody has a smartphone. How do you see those two issues playing out in your field?
Yeah, absolutely. So, well, you know, increasingly smartphone is the most equitable platform. If you, you know, I mean, digitally, I should say. So, you know, that fortunately, smartphone availability is really catching up. In the U.S., you know, I think it's over 80% of people have a smartphone or access to a smartphone at the adult population level. So, you know, in terms of designing digital programs with equity in mind, using a smartphone is typically considered the best application. Now, people do talk about, you know, broadband access, and you know that can certainly be another issue if you have smartphone access. But I think there's a lot of, you know, improvement that's happening there as well. And there's a lot of different ways that you know, health systems, particularly like in rural areas, are trying to address that, and you know, in creating hotspots or places where people can get that free access. And so it's certainly not perfect, but what, you know, we see even in recent studies, 53%, I should say a recent study that I'm speaking about now is 53% of people of color report experiencing microaggressions in their last, you know, therapy interaction. And so, you know, I think we hope to make digital therapeutics that can improve kind of the cultural responsivity and, you know, and help people that may be, you know, not feeling that level of trust with a provider, and especially as like a front door. So I think one of the things we think is like, you know, to the extent that we can help people just get some initial contact with the types of interventions that can be helpful, and you know, and even just reduce that stigma around mental health, which in our digital programs at Big Health, they're really designed to be non-stigmatized. So we're helping people, like we're just helping normalize the symptoms and the experience and things like that. And so hopefully, you know, if folks can even just get like, you know, some initial contact with our programs, they may be more likely to then engage with other types of care as they need it. So it's not mutually exclusive. We just see it as like another option that can really help increase care and hoping, you know, that like things like if broadband access continues to be the largest, you know, obstacle, that's something that we can work on together. Cause I don't think, you know, that feels in my mind more solvable than, getting people to decide to opt into in-person care if they're not ready for it.
And there's certainly a lot of government attention to those last mile issues around broadband access. The Federal Communication Commission has been looking at that for years, and the current conversations around infrastructure have been focused on that as well. So hopefully we'll get there sooner or later.
Yeah, absolutely.
So to wrap things up, let me ask you one final question, which is, if you were to wake up tomorrow and find yourself 5 years in the future, what's one thing in healthcare that you would hope or perhaps expect to find has changed drastically?
Well, I think to pick up on what we were just talking about, I would say I would hope that there's no more mental health stigma. I would hope that through the approaches we're taking now and in large part through this role that digital therapeutics can play, that people really, really have, reduced that feeling of stigma. And it's just that it's just not an obstacle in terms of seeking or approaching care. And obviously that depends on, you know, the healthcare system needs to play a big role there. And, you know, digital therapeutics like my company to play a big role there. Because as soon as we can do that, we can really, really make sure people have access to the right mental health care as soon as possible. So that's what I would hope in 5 years is really, really different.
Well, that's an encouraging vision of the future to be able to move past stigma around seeking mental health care and improving access, something we can all support. Well, I've been speaking with Jenna Carl, Chief Medical Officer at Big Health, a clinical psychologist. Thank you, Jenna, for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me, David. It's been great.
You have been listening to Harlow on Healthcare. Join us at healthcarenowradio.com. Let's continue the conversation on building the future of healthcare together at #HarlowOnHC. I'm David Harlow, keeping the fire going and holding a seat open for you. Until next time.